This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. On this podcast, our focus turns to one of the most notable trends of 2016, the gig economy, and how it's changing the workforce. Recent studies of business professionals show a steadily rising number of non-employee workers, and that means big changes in how companies hire and find new talent. The popularity of services like Uber and Lyft has only served to propel this trend. But as those companies' recent legal difficulties illustrate, employers need to tread cautiously, as the Department of Labor is casting an especially close eye these days on classification issues. To get to the bottom of employment law minefields surrounding the growing gig economy, we'll chat with Fisher Phillips attorney Rich Menegello of the firm's Portland, Oregon office. Rich is co-chair of the firm's new gig economy practice group. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, David, happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. And the gig economy term, Rich, is still relatively new to many people. So tell our listeners what that means and how you see it impacting employers.
For those who are unfamiliar with the term, they might have heard other things like the app economy or the shared economy. And I've even heard it described as the human cloud, but that sort of sounds creepy. So I've steered away from that. The gig economy, the easiest way to describe it is it's simply a contingent workforce operating in a digital marketplace. But to explain what that means, I'm going to veer far away from it for a second and quickly get back to it. I want to describe to you something involving power drills. The average person who owns a power drill only uses it 13 minutes a year, which means that there are 525,587 minutes that power drill is completely wasted. And that problem economists have called idle capacity, and it's confounded economists and business owners really since the dawn of capitalism. Now, remove drills and instead imagine people. So imagine it's a random day and you're walking down the street and you really like a ride somewhere, and you have no idea that the guy who lives in the house right a couple doors down from you has a free hour and has a free car. So when you think about it from that perspective, they have the means to drive you, they have the free time. Now imagine that with any number of sort of tasks, somebody fixing your bookshelf or somebody who needs to fix something in your house. From the demand side, it's never really been a big problem because you could always call a taxi or a handyman service. But from the supply side, this is a game changer. It's an efficient way to match demand for services with those people who have the capability and the essentially idle capacity to do the job for you. And that is the gig economy. We have solved essentially this problem that has vexed economists forever. And we have the technological means to do it now, right? Smartphones and tablets are cheap enough and essentially good enough to efficiently match demand and the idle capacity. Everybody's got one. It essentially has revolutionized the way we think about the way that people can do work. So, again, getting back to my original definition, it's the contingent workforce, people who might want to work but on their own terms, matched together with jobs on a digital marketplace.
Now, you wrote recently, Rich, that the Department of Labor's statistics about job creation are flawed because they've all but ignored the gig economy. What did you mean by that? Are certain job categories not being counted?
Right now, we're not exactly sure how many workers there actually are in the gig economy. In 2012, it was estimated that it was under 100,000 people, only at about 75,000. The latest data we have that is not necessarily completely accurate, says somewhere around 800,000 workers. Now, that's a tenfold increase, but it still only occupies less than 1% of the American workforce. The problem right now is that when the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out their monthly jobs reports and their annual census data, they don't accurately capture the contingent workforce. And a senator from Virginia, Senator Mark Warner, wrote an open letter to the Secretary of Labor earlier this year urging the Department of Labor to capture gig workers in a better manner. We're hopeful that Congress will secure funding to the Department of Labor to do that. And if they accomplish that, we're hoping that by May 2017, when that census is released, we'll actually have better and more accurate data on how big the gig economy actually is. So right now, we don't know how big it is.
And following up on that one, you've written in your blog, which appears on FisherPhillips.com, that the Department of Labor's stance on worker misclassification really belies the modern business world. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I would think many people might be familiar with, when it comes to the gig economy and potential legal problems, that the biggest issue going on right now are lawsuits against Uber and Lyft, which are, you know, the two big massive gig companies in the country. Those lawsuits involve allegations that the drivers for them are not actually independent contractors, but are actually employees. And the federal judge who is having to help parse that out notably said that he found it very difficult because he was being forced to solve a 21st century problem using 20th century laws. And these are the kinds of laws the Department of Labor has promulgated. And he really summarized it in this way. I'm being asked to fit these workers into one of two categories. They're either employees or they're independent contractors. But it's really like having one square peg and trying to decide which of two round holes I'm going to try to jam it into. And so really what we've looked at here is that the Department of Labor is still acting like it's the 20th century and that these workers are going to fit into one of these two very distinct categories. But what we think we're seeing now is that the gig economy has opened our eyes to a hybrid third category somewhere in the middle, whether you call it a dependent contractor or an independent worker. We feel as if society and the economy sort of moving into this different sphere, and the Department of Labor hasn't yet caught up.
Well, what's your take on that litigation? It's certainly gotten a lot of attention, and it does seem like, as you mentioned, it's kind of in the middle, because while these workers might not be employees, in some cases, many of them are working 30 to 40 hours a week for these companies, and that's their predominant source of income.
Well, right, and there's sort of a split there. I mean, you certainly are seeing a lot of litigation being filed by folks trying to take the opportunity to, essentially take advantage of this limbo that we're in right now. But yet, the average gig worker you talk to absolutely thoroughly enjoys the freedom that they're given by doing gig work, and they don't want to be treated like employees. So there's a tension right now between sorting out who would be covered by these laws, how they should be restructured, if they should be restructured at all, and whether or not essentially the gig economy is a perfect anecdote to this idle capacity and solving many of our problems and helping workers who can get some extra money, or is this an exploitative system really taking advantage of people who otherwise are being used and manipulated by gig companies? And a lot of people are unsure about where that tension lies right now.
Should HR folks working for other types of employers be concerned about their part-time worker arrangements, or do you see these cases as just particularly unique to that industry?
No, I think every employer out there should be aware of what's going on in the gig economy for a number of different reasons. From a legal standpoint, the concern absolutely is misclassification. And by that, we're talking about whether or not a worker is correctly classified as an independent contractor or whether or not they're actually employees. And if an employer gets that wrong and is calling somebody who's an employee actually a contractor, but yet they really are an employee, lots of different employment problems can befall them, from workers' compensation coverage to taxation issues to discrimination liability, family leave, wage and hour. A whole host of issues will befall an employer if they misclassify workers. And what's going on right now is that misclassification is becoming a buzzword. In fact, most employers might not even be aware right now, but the Department of Labor released a new set of mandatory workplace posters that need to be in your places of employment starting August 1st. And for the first time ever, the workplace posters on a federal level include the term misclassification and include a small warning to workers that, hey, that you might be misclassified and might have some benefits owing to you. So the way I view this right now is that this is a term of art that once was very technical and legalistic and might be entering employees' vernacular, sort of the same way that sexual harassment and hostile work environment came into the American forefront 25 years ago. It might be now that misclassification is popular enough that your average worker might be aware of it, and your average independent contractor is hearing more and more about this from the gig economy standpoint, and that we are starting to see that being brought into the normal sphere, not just gig companies, but every employer has to be concerned about it.
Very interesting. Again, we're speaking with Rich Menegello, an Oregon employment attorney with Fisher Phillips and the co-chair of his firm's gig economy practice group. Rich, perhaps the biggest challenge for any employer is finding new talent. If you don't have highly qualified workers, it's tough to make even the best of business models succeed, of course. So how is the gig economy impacting recruiting these days?
I think the biggest way to think about it is that your average employer is now facing an entirely new vein of competition that they need to prepare for. So it's not just somebody new in your industry who opened up an office down the street, might be paying workers a little bit more, offering a different benefit package or something. We're talking about an entire new way of thinking that's going on, and that way of thinking is the main competitor that many employers have to face. So rather than just appealing to an employee and saying, here's the stability we can offer you, here's the job we can offer you, and you have to decide between us and our competitor down the street, these workers now can, if they want to, cobble together a lifestyle by doing discrete tasks for a variety of different gig companies. And it's forcing employers to really rethink about what they're offering their workforce, especially if the workforce is comprised of a lot of millennials and other workers who really value independence and freedom and the ability to take on discrete tasks. It's forcing employers to think about whether they want to restructure the way their companies run and certainly restructure their recruiting tactics to try to appeal to these workers who might be more interested in gigs than jobs.
So no question, listening to you to describe this trend, Rich, that it's apparent the appeal of it to employers. But what about employees? Are there concerns here for HR about reduced loyalty, since a temp worker who doesn't have benefits may be more likely to jump ship?
Absolutely. We feel like we're seeing the next stage of a new era in employee-employer relationships. You know, if you trace it back, there was a very long period of time from, the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, I guess, until sometime in the 70s or 80s, where your average worker really craved having a career. And to them, the gold watch at the end of 50 years of service and their retirement was all they dreamed of. And I would say most listeners out there, to get a sense for what I'm talking about, think about your grandparents. And most average grandparents really only had, throughout their adult life, one major job. Now think about the 70s and 80s and the era of corporate restructuring and downsizing and right-sizing and reductions in force. A lot of folks realize, and at this point, they just have a job. They don't have a career. They have to be ready to be able to move and be flexible if necessary. And you think about your parents now, and most parents of ours probably had multiple jobs and moved around a little bit more transitory than your grandparents. Now we think about the current era, and most of us really have also similarly bounced around to different jobs. We look for the next best thing. And the gig economy has really led people to think about themselves as individual micro entrepreneurs. Every day is a new career. Every day is a new job. And a lot of folks have really decided that the way that they want to handle their lifestyle is a series of tasks or gigs where they perform different jobs as opposed to really caring about having the career or caring about having the solid, stable job that we think about. So it's definitely revolutionized the way workers and businesses interact with each other. The power's really not all in the hands of the employers anymore to be able to structure their workforce however they want. The power is shifting towards workers who might want to shift around what they do each and every day in a different manner. And employers have to react and adjust their practices accordingly.
You mentioned earlier that the average gig worker loves the freedom of the arrangement. But there does seem to be a bit of a trade-off, as that last question alluded. So do you see people who currently have full-time jobs truly embracing this gig economy trend?
What we've seen from some recent surveys have demonstrated that upwards of 70% of gig workers have had positive experiences. So we definitely know that the average gig worker in this field doesn't feel as if this is a bad thing. They enjoy it, and most of us out there probably who have taken Uber, oftentimes I know I strike up a conversation with the Uber driver, and it eventually gets around to me asking them how they enjoy it. And honestly, I've had almost universal opinions from my Uber drivers or Lyft drivers that they love what they're doing. But yet at the same time, we've seen, again, the explosion in litigation against gig companies, and there's not just litigation against Uber and Lyft, there's litigation filed against dozens of other gig companies alleging independent contractor misclassification or other kinds of allegations saying that they're not treated as well as they should be. And so that survey also demonstrated that over 50% of freelancers believe that their company is somehow exploiting the lack of regulation that's in their field right now. So again, there's this tension between people really enjoying this freedom, but the law hasn't necessarily caught up to the regulation of the field. Benefits haven't really been clearly delineated, and so we're going through a bit of an era where there's uncertainty and disharmony. The uncertainty is causing potential legal problems, and it's essentially just going to have to work itself out over the next couple of years.
Beyond misclassification and recruiting, are there any other legal traps that an employer needs to be on the lookout for that are raised by the gig economy?
You know, when you look at the gig economy, it's, again, like I said at the beginning, this is a contingent workforce on a digital platform. And a lot of employers have a contingent workforce through staffing arrangements and temp workers and that sort of thing. And so the first thing that I would advise employers is that if they at all use employees or staffing agencies, recognize that there are several federal government agencies, including the Department of Labor and the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, that have really been on the warpath over the last several years regarding staffing companies and contingent workers. And in fact, in the past year, there have been two major NLRB decisions, which essentially have made it much easier for companies to be considered joint employers of their temp workers. And in a decision that just came down in the last few months, making it much easier for temp workers to unionize by joining up with your actual employees and collectively forming a bargaining unit. I guess the first thing I would say for employers is that the gig economy has put a spotlight on contingent workers, and much like misclassification becoming a hot topic, we've also seen joint employment become a hot topic in the last year or so. Beyond that, really, the gig economy is just shining a light on all the kinds of issues that most employers have to deal with as well, whether it's vicarious liability due to the actions of the workers, whether it's access issues, discrimination issues. There are lots of those kinds of issues that are bubbling up and that I would caution employers to be aware of. And really, when it boils down to it, the gig economy is shining a spotlight on various issues and getting a lot of attention. And so I think employers really should be tracking the gig economy so that they can follow the kinds of issues that are going to be facing them on their own doorsteps pretty soon.
It's been almost exactly 1 year since that NLRB joint employer ruling that you referred to. So just really quickly, any thoughts on that as to how that's been affecting how employers do business and classify their workers?
That first decision that we're talking about, the BFI, Browning-Ferris decision, when it happened, and for those who are unfamiliar with it, it essentially made it much easier for workers to be considered joint employees of two different organizations, two different businesses. Once that came out, we were just waiting for the next shoe to drop. And that shoe just dropped last month or the month before when it was decided essentially that for the first time in a while, if the NLRB flip-flopped again and saying, hey, your temporary employees can join up with your regular employees without your consent to form an individual bargaining unit. And so that was essentially the other shoe that we were waiting to drop, and it unfortunately did from an employer's perspective. So those two things combined have really made it more difficult for employers who are operating in the contingent workforce world to have certainty in what's going on with their workforce. We've advised employers who use staffing agencies to make sure that they are working with their council to make sure that their arrangements are square and fit in with not only state and local laws that might impact joint employers, but also now these new federal decisions.
Rich, we have just about a minute or so left. So do you have a final piece of advice that you'd like to share with our listeners before we let you go?
Those who are starting to get familiar with the gig economy, who understand that the gig economy extends a little bit beyond Uber and Lyft, realize that you can find somebody to do just about anything with a simple tap of your smartphone screen. In fact, I know of several gig companies that employ legal services through an app. My advice at this point is that employers out there should go a little bit above and beyond that and get specialized employment counsel to help them with these issues and not just rely on a smartphone app to get their lawyers the same way that they get food delivered to their house or handyman or an Uber drive. Who knows, though, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe the legal services world will move more towards the gig economy. But for right now, I would stick with picking up the phone and calling your labor counsel the old-fashioned way.
Well, let that be the last word. Rich Manighello is a partner with Fisher Phillips in Portland, Oregon, and co-chairs the firm's gig economy practice group. Rich, we really appreciate your insights on this trending issue.
You're welcome. Thanks, David. It's been a pleasure.
I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for listening. Continue checking our website regularly for more podcasts on key employment-related topics, including a recent one you won't want to miss on employee engagement, why your employees just aren't that into you. The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR, our subscription offering, or our 50-state employee handbook, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved.